4 days into another insomnia jag, Tony gives up on the engine he's rebuilding and wanders up to the main floor. The house is middle of the night deserted, no mission or madness to keep them up, and Tony grabs a stick of string cheese out of the fridge and munches on it contemplatively. He walks the house, absently tracking changes. Mjolnir half buried in a coffee table, one of Natasha's throwing stars embedded in the wall. There's a pair of Clint's boxers near his door, probably slipped off the top of the laundry, and Bruce's textbooks are tucked up into Tony's bookcases. Steve's on a health kick, so there are signs of that, too. Apple cores and fruit leather wrappers, a clear message that they're all getting too used to having a cleaning staff. Tony sighs and smiles, all in one breath, and makes a mental note to buy a Roomba to improve upon. Then a flash of movement catches at the corner of his eye. He steps back, cocks his head, and rounds the corner. Steve's in the gym again, going to town on his punching bag. It's new and improved. Titanium in the center, under 6 solid inches of Tony's personal version of Kevlar, with an inch or so of sand around the edges so Steve doesn't actually break his fingers. Repulsors in the top and bottom, tucked into the sides, let it fly around the room when Steve wants it to. And he's usually gasping and clutching at his side when he's done with it. It's voice activated to respond to Steve and Steve alone, and no one else is allowed to touch it. This is because, in all likelihood, it would kill them. Tony's really proud of it, actually. It's always nice making something that works. He didn't build the thing for this, though. Hadn't intended it to enable Steve's late-night workout habits. Tony hadn't actually known it was a habit until just now. For all he keeps odd hours, he generally keeps them in the basement. He remembers that expression on Steve's face, though. The one that looks like he's fighting for something. And he wonders how many nights find Steve here, beating on a punching bag alone. The serum means he doesn't need as much sleep as normal people. Tony's known that from the start, but he's never thought about it. He wonders how many things about Steve he's going to realize too late. How many little pieces he's missed in being the most self-absorbed asshole on the planet. And then he runs a hand through his hair and goes into the gym. "Hey," he says. "Hey," Steve says, after a moment's pause. He brushes sweat-soaked hair out of his eyes with one glove-covered hand, delivers a quick kick to the punching bag to send it off the other way. "Sorry, did I wake you?" "Nah, wasn't sleeping. This room is soundproofed anyway. You don't have to worry about that." Tony eyes the free weights in complete disarray, the slightly erratic, low-battery flight pattern of the punching bag's movements, and sighs. "How long have you been down here, exactly?" "Not sure," Steve says. He gives Tony a narrow-eyed look. "How long has it been since you slept?" "Point," Tony says, because he's too sapped of energy to have this fight. "Come on, then. We may as well be cranky bastards in the same place." He expects Steve to argue with him. Steve shrugs and slips his gloves off, follows Tony back out into the house. They end up in the living room, sprawled over opposite ends of the couch, watching Pretty in Pink, because Tony's in charge of the 80s. "Thanks," Steve says after half an hour, and Tony smiles at him sideways, doesn't say anything at all. Thanksgiving Day, Dr. Doom, and really, Tony thinks, couldn't he have named himself something more apt? Dr. Crazy Pants, maybe, or Dr. Jesus fucking Christ, don't you ever die? Brings every float in the Macy's parade to violent, unrelenting life. The Avengers are on the scene from the beginning, because parades are good publicity stunts. Tony's actually pretty sure Steve is relieved when the balloons start trying to eat them. He really hates the pandering. But the Fantastic Four show up in 15 minutes, the X-Men 5 minutes later. "This is why we can't have nice things," Clint mutters into his comlink, climbing up the scaffolding of a nearby building to get a good firing angle, and Tony laughs.
What, you mean this isn't how you wanted to spend the holiday?
Better than going to see my family, Clint says, firing three shots from his crossbow at the gigantic turkey wandering by.
Although, seriously, I think at least one of these fuckers is actually my sister.
Cut the chatter, Steve says, but cheerfully enough. Iron Man, can you get Black Widow in position for the creepy king thing?
I've said for years the Burger King is a menace.
Widow, on your six, ride the updraft, Tony says, and fires a repulsor at Natasha. She jumps gracefully into the air, pulling daggers out of her mysteriously invisible thigh pockets, and stabs them into the balloon's neck. Too on point to say eat shit, right? She asks, to general amusement, as Thor grabs her gracefully out of the air and throws her towards Mr. Potato Head.
Hulk smash Hulk,
the Hulk says victoriously. Tony has a terrible moment of confusion before he remembers there'd been a Hulk balloon. Oh, hey, that reminds me. We're so done parading, he says, and fires a missile into SpongeBob SquarePants. Because seriously, this is not worth it. I had to rip that Iron Man balloon to shreds. Whoa, Cap, watch it with the shield.
Knew you'd move, Steve says.
Tony can see his grin even from the air. Can someone tell the X-Men to quit with the theatrics? It's bad for crowd control. I suspect they are unaware of their behavior, says Thor. He sounds put out. Mjolnir turns out not to be as useful as usual in a balloon fight. Although it has come to my attention that he with the eyes that shoot fire is unpleasant to interact with. I have not challenged him to combat for his insolence, but I may yet. The day is young.
Keep telling yourself that, Tony says, and ducks around a sudden projectile.
Shit! They can throw things now? What the fuck? Are they learning balloons?
Be advised that the enemy is solidifying, Cap says, voice strained slightly. Getting hard to punch through. Okay, there we go. Somebody find Doom already. This is getting out of hand.
I will seek him out, says Thor, and swoops away.
He'll have the control box with him, Tony says. Don't touch it, just call me. I can probably rewire.
Shit, Clint, drop low.
Yeah, okay, there we go. In the distance, Reed Richards is giving Kermit the Frog a long-limbed, strangling bear hug. Beyond him, Miss Piggy is on fire, though Tony's not sure if that was Johnny Storm or Cyclops. He remembers a time in his life when this would have fazed him, but it's kind of been a while.
Top 10 reasons they should have let the Muppets die out in the 90s, Clint mutters, clearly on Tony's wavelength. Tony hears Natasha's snort of laughter, at odds with the fact that she's just choked out an armed thug with her thighs.
You like the Muppets, Hawkeye, don't lie.
Yeah, the old Muppets, the classic Muppets.
Seriously, the chatter, says Steve. Iron Man, jumping in three.
Roger, Rogers, says Tony, even though he really shouldn't use Steve's real name on the comm, just to see Steve smile as Tony catches him.
Don't do that, Steve says, and Tony grins behind his mask as he lowers Steve to the ground, says, don't do what?
All in all, it's an hour before things are settled down. The street is littered with balloon shreds and float parts, and Doom's being led away in handcuffs.
Tony's seen that enough times to know it won't last, but it's still satisfying.
The cleanup is going to take ages, but that, luckily, is not really Tony's problem. He drops to the ground, flips up his mask, and grins at Steve.
More fun than waving and signing autographs. Am I right or am I right?
I don't have any idea what you're talking about. I'm just glad for the safety of the people of New York, Steve says, eyes wide, too innocent. And Tony's still choking on his laughter when Cyclops and Wolverine find them.
Hey, Steve greets them, nodding. Good fight.
No kidding, says Cyclops, shaking his head at the mess.
Someone's gonna have to put Doom down one of these days. Some days I wonder if he and Richards don't have some kind of, you know, thing going on. Wolverine mutters something that sounds a lot like Prof and Magneto, and Cyclops snorts. Tony's not touching that with a 10-foot pole. Anyways, Wolverine says, you nutjobs move like a well-oiled machine. It's so bad fighting with you. Yeah, Cyclops says. Impressive show all around. Thanks for the help. The help? Tony says, bristling. I'm sorry, the what? Steve's hand lands on his shoulder, hard enough that Tony can feel it through the armor. It means stop. And Tony's mouth snaps shut more or less against his will. He's furious. The help! Honestly, like they hadn't won the damn thing practically by themselves. Fucking X-Men with their superiority complex. But then Steve smiles. Thanks, he says. We make a great team. And maybe Tony is not so annoyed after all. There may be a lot of things Tony doesn't know. Where Rhodey keeps the porn stash Tony knows he's got. Pepper's inexplicable knowledge of whatever Tony's thinking of saying. How to make Thor understand that Google is a verb. But he knows how romance works. At least for him. He's not a stupid man by any stretch of the imagination. And he's aware that his feelings for Steve are stupid and self-destructive. That they're never going to come to fruition. He's entertained a couple of fairly compelling fantasies. Crazy sex drug attacks, passionate, we almost died, oh wait, no, it's you, shit, yuck, makeouts, end of the world with no other option scenarios. But even in his fantasies, he can't let himself look at the possibility that Steve would want him normally. He's self-destructive, but he's not that self-destructive. Steve doesn't even like him. Tony's too smart not to take what he can get. They're on the couch in the living room again. It's become kind of a thing for them, these late-night rendezvous. Tony's hours are erratic even when he's managing to sleep. And Steve, as it turns out, never needs more than 4 hours of rest a night. Tony's got the footage from the Macy's fiasco playing on the television. Is slipping back and forth from it to Ghostbusters, because he's always been of the firm belief that Bill Murray movies should be watched out of order. Natasha's favoring her left side there, Steve says, frowning at the fight footage. Jarvis, can you freeze that? Shit, Tony says, staring with his head cocked. You think she'll listen if you tell her to report her injuries? She hasn't the last 10 times, Steve says, and sighs. Tony flicks back to Ghostbusters absently, reaches into the popcorn bowl. Maybe you can upgrade her jumpsuit? You say that like she'll let me anywhere near it, Tony says. Too underhanded to use Pepper? Yes, Steve says, and scrubs his face. No? I don't know. Pepper's very scary, Tony says, and then grins at the screen. Almost time for Don't Cross the Streams. God, I bit that back like 15 times during the whole Macy's thing. You'll see why. Michelin Man, I mean, come on! You're not making sense again, says Steve. And quit switching the feed. I want to make sure we don't miss anything. Tony warms at the we, enough that he risks giving Steve a cheeky grin. This is classic film history, Rogers. The feed will still be there after this scene. I recorded it. It's only playing when we watch it. Are you maligning my technology? You need to sleep, Steve says, laughing. You're talking too much again. Give me the remote. I never talk too much, Tony says, which is just a bold-faced lie. I talk just enough. And what do you mean the remote? There's no remote. What remote are you talking about? That remote? Steve says, reaching around Tony to grab it. Tony ducks and weaves, trying to snatch it before Steve can. Their shoulders knock, and then their chests. And then suddenly Steve's face is right over Tony's, his hand braced on the cushion behind him. Tony says, because he's hard suddenly. And that's probably something you should get on top of hiding. Hi there? Hi. Steve breathes, And then he's bringing his head down and pressing his lips to Tony's. It's not the best kiss of Tony's life. It's not even in the top 10, which really isn't Steve's fault. Steve's soft and hesitant and tastes like buttered popcorn. But Tony can't even begin to enjoy it. Tony can't do anything, really, except lie there and try frantically to process what's happening. He fails spectacularly at it, and in the end, he shoves Steve back by the shoulders and scrambles to the other end of the couch. "Oh my God," Steve says, flushing bright red. "Oh God, Tony, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I just thought..." "But you don't even like me," Tony says, shell-shocked, and regrets it the instant it comes out of his mouth. "I wouldn't ever want to make you..." Steve starts, and then he stops. His eyes widen and his mouth drops open, and he stares at Tony like he's never seen him before. "Wait, what?" "Never mind," says Tony. "Definitely never mind. Such a big never mind. Never and mind combined is the way to go. I didn't say anything. Hey, Jarvis, can we maybe figure out some memory erasing in the next 2 seconds? That'd be..." "You think I don't like you?" Steve says, his voice cracking on it. "Tony, why?" "Because you don't," Tony says, throwing his hands in the air. "You never have. The first time we met..." "But that was..." Steve says, his brow furrowed now. "Tony, that was months ago. And then you'd only talk to me when I was Iron Man." "You'd only talk to me when you were Iron Man," Steve cries. He looks horrified, Tony registers through his own mortification, and wonders what that's about. "I figured you were one of those guys who didn't like mixing off-duty with on. I've served with guys like that. I wasn't going to push it. We had to work together." "Right," Tony says wretchedly, because he's always known that Steve tolerated him for the team's sake, but it's a little rough to hear it confirmed. "We had to work together, I know, and it's really good of you to have swallowed it so we could be teammates. And look, don't worry about it. Most people don't like me. I don't exactly make myself easy to like. It doesn't change anything, I know." "Tony, what are you talking about?" "The team," Tony says. And, oh, he's babbling. Maybe Steve was right about the sleeping and the talking too much. This is really, really awful. "You had to, for the team. We had to work together, and I just got a little..." "But you're just..." "I mean it, you're just a good person, and you could have made it really obvious, but you didn't, and I appreciate it, and we can just go back to me appreciating it. Can we stop having this conversation now?" "No, we can't," Steve snaps, and grabs Tony's wrist when he tries to physically flee the room. Damn Captain America and his damn super strength. "God, have I really been that bad of a friend to you?" "No," Tony says. "Hey, no, that's my whole point. You were great. You..." "Wait, friend?" "Jesus Christ," Steve says, and scrubs at his forehead with the hand that isn't holding Tony in place. Tony, I don't... "It was awful before I met you. Half the time, you're the only thing that makes this century bearable. How could you not know that?" "But I..." Tony says. "I'm obnoxious and I never listen and I'm not a team player and..." "Right," Steve says, and takes Tony by the shoulders. "Okay, look. I know you've got some, issues, for lack of a better word. Please don't take that the wrong way. So I'm just gonna lay it all out on the table, all right? And stop looking at me like I'm going to kill you. Tony, that's not really helping me feel better about my friendship skills." "I'm not looking at you like I think you're going to kill me," Tony says. "I just want you to kill me or let go of me so we can stop talking about this. You've just got my faces confused." "You are," Steve says, "a complete pain in my ass some of the time. You never do what I tell you to do, and you never admit when you're wrong. And sometimes I think you're going to die from not sleeping enough, and sometimes I think you're going to literally run yourself into the ground. You say hideously inappropriate things to very important people, and some days I want to shake you. Okay, Tony snaps, and tries to wrench himself out of Steve's grip again. I get it. Thanks. I don't need the fucking list, believe me. And you're also, Steve says, tightening his fingers on Tony's shoulders, the kindest, funniest, most thoughtful person I've met since I woke up, once you get past the whole outer shell of being a defensive ass thing. You make it easy for me to be myself. You listen to me and fight with me and understand that I have a sense of humor, and you never make me feel like I'm stupid because I don't know what Jersey Store or whatever it's called. I was wrong the first time I met you, okay? Can you hear that? I didn't know you, and I'd been in a basement for 2 months being poked by scientists and everyone I knew was dead. My judgment wasn't exactly something I want to be held to for the rest of my life. Says Tony, blinking. What? I like you, Tony, Steve says, and his voice breaks on it again. He shakes his head like he's trying to clear it, rubs one thumb unconsciously over Tony's collarbone. I like you very much. I've liked you for months, and I can't believe you didn't know that. And I'm going to keep telling you now, because I never want to have this discussion with you again. Do you understand me? Oh, says Tony. Yes? Great, Steve says. And then all his steely composure slips, and he blushes bright red. Also, sorry about kissing you like that. I just, it won't happen again. There's something funny happening in Tony's chest. He'd think he was having a heart attack if he wasn't intimately familiar with how that felt. He feels warm all over, awash with something he's too much a coward to quantify. And he's not processing much, but he's processing enough. Like hell it won't, he says, and grabs Steve by the back of the neck, drags him in. The kiss is better this time, because Tony is actually an engaged participant. Steve is soft at first, careful, hands still on Tony's shoulders. Tony angles himself forward, insinuates himself between Steve's arms, between his lips. He wraps his legs around Steve's waist and Steve groans into his mouth, his hands stuttering their way down Tony's back. Probably shouldn't, Steve mumbles after a minute. I mean, right here? No exhibitionism kink? Tony asks giddily, and has to bite a kiss into Steve's neck when he blushes. God, you blush everywhere when you blush. Did you know that? It's so distracting. Tony, Steve says, more firmly this time. And Tony laughs because he can't help himself. Okay, okay. Bedroom it is. You got it. Anything you want. Coming right up. We don't have to, Steve says, and waves a hand. I mean, if you don't want to, I don't expect... If I don't want to? Tony repeats. See, okay, if you're worried about your friendship skills, then I'm worried about my seduction skills. Let me show you how much I definitely want to. He grabs Steve's hand, drags it down to his crotch, and presses it against the tented fabric there. Steve's blush goes impossibly deeper, but his pupils are blown already, and when he takes a breath, it's ragged. Oh, he says. Oh. Yeah. Oh, Tony says. Let's see how far down that blush goes. Betcha I can get you to keep it up. You didn't expect me to shut up during this kind of thing, did you? I hope you didn't. This is the least effective way to do that. Tony, Steve says. And there it is. That's the voice he uses in the field, insistent and in charge. It's at odds with a flush on his neck, at the tips of his ears. But when he drags Tony into standing and pulls him into another kiss, Tony can't bring himself to devote much attention to that dichotomy. Steve guides him backwards toward the stairs, hands on his hips, and that's all Tony can do to keep from blowing him in the middle of the hallway. I want to blow you right here in the hallway, Tony says, because he figures that's the kind of information Steve should have. And Steve's whole body shudders. God, Tony, you can't just say things like that, Steve groans, and kisses him again, mouth open and working like his life depends on it. They make it up the first few stairs, painfully slowly. Every time they break apart to take a step, one of them leans in again. After the fourth time this happens, Steve says, "Oh, hell, this is ridiculous," and lifts Tony off the ground, slamming their mouths together with a gracelessness that probably shouldn't be hot. Under normal circumstances, Tony would object to being carried around. Under these circumstances, he's glad of the chance to wrap his legs around Steve's waist, to grind hard against his stomach. "God damn it," Steve gasps, and doesn't stop kissing Tony the whole way up the stairs. His hands are on Tony's ass, and Tony would be willing to bet Steve's not aware of the fact that they're flexing and squeezing every time he presses forward. It makes it kind of hard to focus, or think, or breathe, actually. Not that Tony's particularly worried about it. They're in the bedroom before Tony can even process that the stairs are gone. He kicks the door shut behind Steve's back, reaches down with one hand to cup Steve's dick over his pants as they approach the bed. Steve sucks in a sharp breath and drops him, and Tony falls back onto the sheets, laughing a little. "Oh, God," Steve says. And the blush is practically a permanent thing, isn't it? Tony hopes he never stops. "Sorry." "I'm not," Tony says. "I meant it about blowing in the hall. Let's get those pants off." And he scrambles forward and undoes Steve's flies. Then he has to stare for a second because... well... because damn... "Packing some heat, aren't you?" he says, voice hoarse, and Steve puts a hand to the back of his neck. Maybe, he says. "I mean, I never really had any basis for... I saw other guys in the shower and stuff, but it's the only part of me that didn't, grow after the serum." "It didn't..." Tony starts and stops. He's seen Steve's file, seen photos of Steve before the serum. The idea of Steve, short and scrawny and hung like this, sends a white-hot spark down Tony's spine. "Oh, I am going to," Tony says, and licks his lips. "I'm gonna just... you just stay there. You don't move, Steve. Jesus, gonna give you the orgasm of your life." "I don't, Steve says. "I don't have much experience with... I think I've got enough experience for everyone," Tony says faintly, and then thinks, meets Steve's eyes. "But, hey, look, if I do anything you don't want me to do, you stop me, okay? I can do slow if you want to do slow. I can do slow, but you're gonna have to say so, because I really want your dick in my mouth." "Oh, God," Steve says. And it's more a groan than anything else. Tony grins, licks his lips again, and slides off the bed and onto his knees. "Taking that as a yes," he murmurs against Steve's hip bone. When Steve nods, Tony wraps his hand around the shaft and pulls Steve's dick into his mouth. Steve bucks forward instantly, clearly without meaning to. He's apologizing before Tony has a chance to stop him pulling back. "Don't," Tony manages, trying to spend as little time as possible with his mouth free. "Don't you dare hold back. I've got it. God, you're so good. Just, fuck, Steve, don't go anywhere. Don't apologize." "Tony," Steve says, thick and hungry, as Tony draws him in again. This time he doesn't pull away, just fists one hand in Tony's hair. The other, Tony realizes after a minute, is braced against the wall, holding him up. His knees are shaking. Tony rubs his free hand against the back of Steve's thigh and is rewarded with a full body tremor, and Steve's fingers tighten in his hair. "Tony," he says. "Oh, God, Tony, Tony." And Tony can't help it. He slides a hand into his own pants, wraps his fingers around his cock. He's too old for this kind of shit. He knows it. Too well-versed in this kind of thing to be working towards coming in his pants. But Jesus Christ, he's not sure he has much choice. Steve bucks again into his mouth, says his name a fourth, a fifth time, and Tony's so hard he's sure he's going to die from it. Wants to come like he's never wanted anything in his life. Steve chokes. God. And then he tenses all over and comes into Tony's mouth, trembling knees very nearly giving way. Tony swallows and swallows and thinks there's a chance he'll hold out and be able to wait for Steve's hands on him. Then Steve runs his fingers through Tony's hair and he just loses it, comes without even meaning to, his hands still fisted around both their dicks. Steve says, voice shaky after a second. Did you just... Still kinda. Tony chokes and lets his face settle against Steve's thigh. Steve drops to the ground. Whether out of intent or necessity, Tony's not sure. And Tony gasps into his chest, waits for his head to clear. When it does, Steve's hand is still in his hair, and he's making a soft, amused sort of sound. If you are laughing right now, Tony manages, I swear to you, I will take drastic action. It's just, Steve says, and yeah, he's laughing. Tony's going to kill him. I just can't believe we didn't use the bed. It's kind of right there. Oh, Tony says, blinking. When he lifts his head, Steve's smiling at him, eyes half-lidded and content. Next time? Then he freezes, because he's assuming there's a next time, and that's a stupid, silly thing to do. And who is he, exactly? He thought he was Tony Stark! He should know better than anyone that assuming only gets you a sad, pathetic morning after. And then Steve is smiling, so big and wide that Tony worries a little for his cheeks, and leaning in to press a soft, easy kiss to the corner of Tony's mouth. Next time, he says. So that's all right. Even after Pepper, the sensation of waking up next to someone, of waking up next to someone and wanting them there, is still more or less foreign to Tony. He blinks against the strangeness of it, the arm pinning him to the bed, and then his brain catches up to his body, and he lets his head loll to the left. Steve spread out over the sheets, face slack with sleep, hair in his eyes. Tony's not really sure his heart can take it. He's not sure he even wants it to. Jarvis, he whispers, let a little light in, yeah? There's a soft, mechanical whirr, and then the blinds open slightly, faint slats of light falling over Steve's back. Tony traces one of them with a fingertip, not quite awake enough to be horrified at himself, and smiles at nothing. Hey, Steve says, without opening his eyes. Tickles. Yeah, it does, Tony agrees, because his higher thought processes aren't really online. I can stop. No, Steve says, and yawns hugely, back arching to Tony's hand. He cracks one eye open and smiles. Nice to know you sleep sometimes. When no alternative presents itself, Tony says. Is that what this was? A drawn-out ploy to knock me out? Because seriously, they sell sedatives and stuff. You didn't need to go through the trouble of... Shut up, Tony, Steve says. Nothing but amusement in his voice. And puts his hand on Tony's cheek. He leans forward and kisses him, an easy, half-awake thing, and Tony is so relieved he could actually choke on it. Guess that answers the question of whether you still like me in the morning, he jokes when Steve pulls back. Like always, it comes out upsettingly honest, and he winces into the pillow.
Jesus, let's strike that from the record.
Nope. Steve says, and kisses him again, yawning into his mouth this time. That should be gross, Tony thinks distantly. There's definitely something gross about that, and I'll come up with it later. For now, he just kisses back, enjoys the sensation unwinding in his stomach. The soft, strange warmth of doing this without any intent behind it. When Steve pulls away, his hand is still on Tony's cheek, and he smiles. "Good morning, Tony," he says. "I still like you." Tony would say something to that. He really would. Except he's pretty sure anything he could say would be appalling one way or the other. He moves closer instead, presses a kiss into the top of Steve's shoulder. And Steve just sighs and shifts against him, running a hand along his spine. "Maybe a little more sleep," he says, slurred a little, already half out. "Sure," Tony says. "Whatever you want, you got it." Steve's hand lands on his ass. He squeezes once, and Tony almost laughs because he'll be horrified if he remembers that. And then he lets out a long snore. Tony waits him out, just to be sure, lets the minutes creep by until his whole body is slack. Then he glances up at the ceiling, takes a deep breath, and grins. "Hey, Jarvis," he says, "if you could strike the whole, put that Captain America is a dick on my tombstone thing, I'd appreciate it." "That seems prescient, Mr. Stark," Jarvis says. "Is there anything else?" "Nah," Tony says. "Think I'm good. Wake us if we need to fight crime." The end. Author's note. Right, so I'm sorry this isn't brusky. Here's what happened. I saw the Avengers trailer, which you might want to watch before you read this, because, and then I, more or less blacked out and wrote 2,100 words in 5 days. Honestly, I don't know what else to tell you guys. This was a complete accident. Massive, impossible, mind-numbing amounts of thanks to Where's Walnut for tolerating me, Fox Cub for letting me spam her inbox, Shay Frotherdon for waging the good war against my fascination with italics, and, of course, Postcard Mystery, who literally read every word of this story as it was written and coaxed me through to the end. You guys are the best! Hearts. The sequel to this story is called Situation Normal, All Fucked Up, which will also be podficked by me, Rena Jenkins, at a later date. So stay tuned and enjoy that one when it comes out. Okay? Cool. Bye.